Good morning, everyone. Really happy to see you all today. I hope you have recovered from the gala dinner by now. Welcome to Concurrent Session 8C, Loaded Assumptions, Straight Line to the Moon. My name is Lucy Chan, and I'm from Tao. I am your chairperson today. So firstly, I'll introduce the speakers today. We have Matt Ralph. I'm still recovering. Regional Chief Actuary of Australia and New Zealand of GenRe. Matt's role has oversight over pricing of group and retail. In Matt's 30-plus years of career, he's covered areas spanning across superannuation, general insurance, and life insurance in areas of consulting, corporate, startups, and also in UK and in Australia. We also have here Lawrence Liu, the Principal Actuary of GenRe. Lawrence has extensive experience in insurance and reinsurance. Over the course of his career, he specialized in group pricing, reinsurance structure, and experience investigations. He's passionate about turning analytics into actionable strategies that enhance risk management and business performance. Both speakers today have a unique blend of technical expertise and strategic insights into complex actuarial challenges. So now, strap in, brace yourself as the speakers take you to the moon and back. Gentlemen, we are go for launch.
I was going to complain that I actually don't have 30 plus years of experience, because of 30 years in August. All right. But then I do need to put my glasses on, so that sort of debases that a little bit. All right, so thanks, everyone. I'm really sorry to the guys on this side of the room. It is hard to see, and there are going to be some visuals, so I apologize in advance for that. That was unforeseen by us. I think some of the key ones we were just talking, I think, are going to be on the right-hand side of the screen, so hopefully that will work for you. Okay, so what are we here to talk about? So, all right. This is the context. So we're going to do background and context. So I'm just going to explain what we're talking about. We've got a little survey to test out your pricing skills. Lawrence is going to talk us through some modelling that he's done to sort of try and emphasise how actuarial judgment and actuarial decisions can impact on the results that you see from your pricing exercises. And then we've got some conclusions at the end. All right, so here are some – these are real numbers. These are some Superfund TPD price increases over the last number of years. They're not all the same years, but you can see that there is a pattern there. There is a lot of change going on, a lot of large increases in cases, multiple year-on-year increases. There are some decreases in there as well, which is interesting. Some schemes more than others, but the overall pattern there is not something that would be great from a member point of view. So these are large. This is TPD insurance in large super funds. So what are the causes of the volatility here and the changes? Obviously, one is real experience, so experience of TPD deteriorating over a number of years. So that's definitely a key element. There's definitely, obviously, commercial aspects to this, so funds or insurers, rather, using their commercial position to optimize their business going forwards. But the one we want to talk about is the actuarial process and the fact that the decisions we make as actuaries, the way that we go about our job, the conscious and subconscious bias that creeps into what we do has an impact. So the choice of methodology is one. The manner in which we choose our assumptions is another. The fact that sometimes we fixate on certain aspects of the experience and don't consider as much other aspects of the experience, and sometimes don't worry about the credibility of the thing that we are fixating on. And definitely unconscious bias creeps into the way that we set our prior views. So what we're kind of initially expecting is going to happen is influenced by unconscious bias. So it's not the biggest factor, the actuarial method. It's not as important as the underlying experience or some of those commercial factors. But we wanted to think about what impact it could have. So for those that aren't group pricing practitioners in Australia, just a quick kind of 101 in terms of how that process works. Now, obviously, every insurer does things differently. Every reinsurer does things differently. But the reality is there's actually quite some similarities between the way the different insurers operate. And so there will be nuances within this, but this is the basic process. Okay, so you get some raw data from the fund, which will be claims, membership, premiums. You rescale that data. So you're setting the data what you want to do is restate the data so that it reflects the current premium rates and the current benefit design. So you adjust the history accordingly. So you've got a view of what would claims look like under the current benefit design on current premiums. You then go through a detailed process of setting your assumptions. So the key ones that you'd be interested in would be your reporting patterns on TPD. And for those that don't know, TPD will often have an average delay, reporting delay of 2 years on some of these funds. So the reporting pattern is incredibly important. Acceptance rates are also important. At the point that you're doing the pricing, there'll be a number of claims that haven't been determined yet. That can also take a long time at times. So you'll have a number of pending claims. You'll have to have a view as to how likely it is that they're going to be admitted. If you're doing DI, you'd also be interested in DI termination rates. You'd also be interested in DI payout ratios, so how much people get paid as a proportion of what their benefit was. Having said all those assumptions, there's a lot of judgment already that's gone into the process. Having said all those assumptions, you then have to come up with your historical loss ratios. So these are not known. There's a lot of estimation that goes into this. You obviously know what's been paid, but you need to take into account your IBNR, you need to take into account your pending claims and your disabled lives if that's relevant. And so from there, you've now got a nice history of historical loss ratios. You then use that to extrapolate in some way as to what you think the future loss ratios are going to be. So over the period that you're actually going to be insuring the lives, what do you think the loss ratios would be? That tells you how adequate the current premiums are, and from there, obviously, you can then quickly decide what do we want the loss ratio to be, and therefore, can we adjust the do we need to adjust the premiums going forwards? So that's the process. Now, we're going to focus on three elements of that process. So the first of those is the reporting patterns and how you take the data on historic notifications of claims and turn that into a reporting pattern that you're going to assume is going to continue in the future, how you use your reporting patterns to set your IBNR, so which method you choose and how you apply it, and then how you take those historic loss ratios and turn them into a predicted loss ratio. Okay, so that's the process, and that's where we're going to focus. So just to give you an example or some sort of feel for how volatile these things can be, here's a couple of charts from a pricing exercise. It's a notional pricing exercise. It's not anyone's real data, so don't worry about that. So on the left-hand side, this is illustrating reporting patterns. These are both, there's a blue line and a red line there. They're both taken from the same data. We've just chosen different ways to look back over the history. So one of the lines, I actually don't know which one's which, but one of them looks back over 12 months. One of them looks back over 36 months. There's arguments for both, so neither of those is right or wrong. 36 months, more data, more credibility. 12 months, more recent, more reflective of what you might expect going forward. So who knows which one of those is right and wrong. There's arguments both ways. Those two lines might look reasonably close together, but in fact, the difference between those lines is very significant, and if you were to use either of those, you'd get very different answers in terms of the ultimate claims cost. On the right-hand side, we have a loss ratio chart. So this is 6 years' worth of loss ratios. The blue is the paid and the pending, so reasonably certain. Some ambiguity around the pending maybe, but reasonably certain what the blue is. But the red is the IBNR. It's completely open to judgment as to what those red bars should be. And, you know, as I just said, if you used the left-hand data there, you'd get very different answers for the red bars, depending on which one of those two lines you chose. So on the right-hand side, just setting those loss ratios is hard enough. That's just the history. If we then think about how to project those into the future, and this is where the shooting to the moon bit comes in. So it was going to come in at some point, and here we go. All right, so that's the same IBNR, same loss ratio data that you just saw previously. 6 years' worth of historical information, some definite uncertainty as to what those six numbers should be, especially in the more recent years. And we've drawn three lines on the chart now, three lines representing three different actuaries having three different views about what's going to happen next. So the first actuary, he chose the green line. He simply said 6 years of data, the right-hand side is pretty uncertain. I'm going to use as much information as I can. I'm just going to draw a straight line through all six, and I'm going to assume it's just going to carry on into the future at that level. So that's the green line. The second actuary, she chose the purple line. I think it's purple. I am colorblind, so if I get my colors wrong, apologies, but I think it's purple. So she said, clearly something's changed here. Something in 2022, the fourth bar there, something was different. And I'm actually going to disregard the first 3 years because I just don't think they're indicative of what's been happening since and not indicative of what I think is going to happen in the future. So I'm going to draw an average through the last three and extrapolate that one forever. So that's the purple line there. So that's what we might call a step change. So something changed in 2022 and it goes from there. And then the third actuary, he chose the blue line. So he also thought things were getting worse over time. But he was more of a view that rather than it being something sudden that happened in 2022, he couldn't explain what that was. He didn't know any reason why there should be a step change. So he took the view that things were gradually getting worse over time, or steadily getting worse over time. And so he chose the blue line, which is the shoot for the moon line that just says the things are going to carry on getting worse forever. I think it's an allusion to investors and young investors, younger than me, investors who talk about this stuff on Reddit. And apparently, if you assume something is going to carry on appreciating forever, you're an idiot and you're shooting for the moon. So we're not saying the actuary is an idiot, but we are saying it's obviously challenging to assume that something that maybe has been increasing over time is going to carry on increasing forever. So there's a lot of ambiguity in these choices. And obviously, which one of those three lines you choose is going to massively impact where you're going to pitch your pricing. It's going to have a huge impact. And oftentimes the decisions that you're making on the back of this are hugely important to the insurer. So, if you're the incumbent insurer, you're terrified that if you sort of choose the shoot to the moon line, you're going to lose the business. And, you may be very clever, but you've got no business left at the end of it. And some of these chunks of business are huge. And equally, you've also got to worry about you're deploying a lot of capital and the potential losses on some of these chunks of business are huge if you underprice. So there's a lot at stake and a lot of influence on your subconscious as to where you set some of these assumptions. All right. So we're going to do a bit of a survey. We're going to do a bit of a test of your pricing skills. So this is going to be particularly hard for the people on the right-hand side, but there is a QR code there. If you click on that QR code, it should take you through to a survey called Loaded Assumptions. If you get the title Loaded Assumptions at the top of the page, you're on the right track. So I'll just give you a moment and you'll see we've got some, just bear with me a second. People are still going. All right. When all the phones are down, I'm going to assume we're ready to go. Technology is great until someone sticks a pillar in the way. That's what we're learning. Apparently buildings need pillars these days. Who knew? All right, are we good? No? One, two more? It's a test of your technical skills as well. All right, here we go. So here's the first one. So on the left-hand side, two claims patterns. They're actually quite close together. They're quite nice. So I don't think we've got a lot of uncertainty, a little bit, but not too much on the reporting pattern. But on the right-hand side, you can see now the loss ratios that we've come up with. So using those reporting patterns. And I want everyone to have a think about how they would draw their line from here. Are they going to draw a straight average? Are they going to draw an upward trend? Probably not. Are they going to draw a downward trend? Or are they going to say there's been some sort of a step change? I should say, for those that aren't in the game, there is a lot more nuance that goes into this than what we're talking about, how we're simplifying it today. But we're not far off. So usually there's some element of this kind of decision having to be made. And if you think you're really sophisticated and you don't have to do this, I suspect that you've got some assumptions going somewhere else that you don't even think about that are actually doing this for you without you even controlling it. So where do you think? I'm going to put mine in so that I can see the answers. We don't have the answers up on the board, but I can tell you that 55%, 57% have set a straight average, so just about half, just slightly over half. 24% have said there's a step change. 19% have said there's a downward trend, so they're going to win. And the 2% have said there's an upward trend. So their appointed actuary is very happy with them, but nobody else is. Okay, let's go on to the second one. Scenario two. So, okay, so different view this time. Same question. So is this a straight average, upward trend, downward trend, or a step change? Okay. Just wait for that to come through. Okay, answers are still updating. Ooh. Lawrence, you've done a good job. This is a split decision. Split decision. So, and this is literally every insurer who's participating will be making something along the lines of this decision. So we have 44% saying straight average, so less than half saying a straight average, but that's the most. Step change, 38%. So 38% saying something happened in 2022, and I'm going to price that in. Now, in reality, you'd go away and you're trying to work out what that thing might be, and you might change your mind if you couldn't come up with a decent explanation. 17% saying a shoot to the moon trend upwards, and 3% upsetting their appointed actuary by saying it's a downward trend. fair enough, but they still win. Okay, or maybe not, actually, maybe not. I think some trustees are getting a bit wise to some of the stuff that goes on. Third one, slightly different this time. So we have a claims reported chart that just shows some differentiation. So there's two possible lines that you could draw there. Don't worry about what each of them represents. There's just two different versions of how you've selected your reporting pattern from the data. And they give you respectively the two lines on the right-hand side. So the blue line there from the blue delay pattern and the red line from the red delay pattern. So these are two perfectly plausible views of what the loss ratios have been. And you need to draw a line as to where you think the loss ratio is going to go. So you're just going to choose sensitivity one, which is the blue one, and just say it's an average of that line. Or you could choose the red line and say it's the average of that line. You could say, I'm going to choose an average of the two. You could say there's a trend going up, probably if you're looking more at the red line. Or if you're looking perhaps more at the blue line, you might say there's a trend going down. Again, in reality, there's a lot more nuance. You could spend a lot more time sort of trying to figure out why you're getting the difference, deciding which you think is the more plausible one, et cetera, et cetera. So it's definitely possible, but, you know, at the end of the day, you have to make a call. So just humor us and give us your view on which of those you would go with. I'll choose mine. There's no right answer, by the way, obviously. Okay, a bit more one-sided this time. So we've got three quarters, 76% saying average of both sensitivities, which is hedging, but it's what I chose as well. Straight average of sensitivity two was 14%, and straight average of sensitivity one, 7%, trend upwards three, and trend downwards zero. So I think the key point to take away from that survey is all smart people all have done, or many of you will have done this many times before, looking at the same information, came up with different views of what the future holds. And those different views would lead to very different decisions as to what the price should be for that block of business. Okay, so just if you can now just head back to the main Summit HQ app for the Q&A. And we will move on. Okay, so I'm going to hand over to Lawrence in a second. So Lawrence has done an investigation looking at some of the impacts here. We wanted to try and answer a couple of questions. So first of all, how important actually is the setting of the runoff assumptions and the IBNR in setting your rates? And secondly, that decision-making, that sort of extrapolation process where you're deciding where things are going to go in the future, how important is that? And, you know, maybe thinking about how visual are we as actuaries, and do we get hung up on what appears to be a pattern in a visual chart when there actually is no underlying pattern to be there? So what he's done is he's done a simulation of the pricing exercise. He's done a stochastic simulation of the pricing exercise, and we've looked at the results of that. So he started by coming up with a variety of scenarios. So for what is actually happening. So maybe incurred claims may be stable over time, or maybe they're increasing, or maybe they're decreasing. So under each of those scenarios as to what the real world is, maybe the runoff pattern is getting faster or is stable. He's then run multiple simulations of what the actual data would be under those. So getting, many simulations of actual claims data, assuming the underlying scenario is the expected. And then having gathered lots of different sets of data, he's asked some fictional actuaries to come up with their pricing by actually using that data to set their assumptions and to set their IBNR view, and then their future loss ratio. So, and he's come up with a few different actuaries. So one, different actuaries doing things in different ways, which I'll explain to you in a minute. And then for each of those scenarios with each of those actuaries, he's compared the different actuaries' results in terms of whether there's bias creeping in, so that they're systematically overestimating or underestimating the true underlying pattern, and how efficient each of those models is. So how well do they hone in on the right number, or how spread are the results? So that's essentially what he's done, and he'll take us through the results of that, and then we can talk about what that might mean for the industry. Over to you, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lucy and Matt, for the intro and context. And now for the what I call the three-star component of the presentation. Just letting you know, we're the only presentation in the whole day that's rated 3 out of 3 stars that the Institute has objectively rated. Now, unfortunately, 3 out of 3 stars doesn't mean how good this presentation is or will be. It's how technical it is. So bear with me. I'll try to explain the concepts in the most simple way of what I've done. So just a glimpse of what the results are going to look like. You'll see a lot of these charts. Unfortunately for us, we weren't actually able to find a model which always gave the same answer and with a very low volatility. And so what you would generally see is models would give out answers which are either biased but with a high volatility, unbiased with a bit of skew, in this case to the right, or at the bottom two charts, biased with a low volatility. So more certainty in the answer, but generally when you do it multiple times, over 1,000 times in this scenario, it's either always slightly above what our true expected result is or slightly below what our true expected result is. So just a bit more detail on what I've done. So there's two components to this. It's first of all, what is my control? And my control is I'll come up with a set of exposures throughout the years. I'll come up with some incidence rates, and I can vary those incidence rates between what I'm trying to test in each scenario. So it could either be increasing, stable, or decreasing, or a step change. And then based on this claim to simulate, I'll simulate when they got reported based on a certain distribution. Again, I could also change that either the reporting pattern is either stable, speeding up, slowing down, or a step change. For the purpose of this presentation, I've really stuck with stable and speeding up, but we can certainly assess, later on whether what's the impact of slowing down and having a shock, what we call a shock, but some of that later on. And then this is what we do as actuaries, take the data and then apply our IBNR methods. I've used three different methods here, the most traditional one being the chain ladder that we all, I think, would use as a benchmark to see where the results lie. Obviously, there's the BF method, which is sort of using prior to set your assumptions for areas where you think it needs, is a bit volatile. And then what I call a linear method, some details on that later on. And as we saw in the survey slides, we actually went through a decision-making process inside our heads. And what I've tried to do is effectively map it out in a sort of what I call a decision tree. So when you looked at the graph, did you start off with, was there a trend first versus then assessing, okay, if there wasn't, what's your next assessment criteria? So I've tried to model two different actuaries. So again, a bit more detail on how similar the claims. So the black text over there is the claim simulation, 100,000 members, stable incidence or increasing incidence, which I think here is 2% per annum, and a step change. And we're really trying to predict the blue the blue box or the blue text. IBANA methods, so effectively three different methods, as I said before. The chain ladder, so using the top left-hand triangle, applying the chain ladder to predict the bottom right-hand triangle. The BF method, something that we typically use is, say, again, we still use the top left-hand triangle, but for the more volatile periods in the last development year, these upper quarters, you use some sort of prior. For my prior, I chose to use a moving average of the prior pi periods. And here's what I call the linear method. Effectively, I'm saying it's a blend between the chain ladder and the BF method. So mathematically, the chain ladder says, you know, x of t plus 1 is a multiple of what's previously been developed. The BF method would say, well, x of t plus 1, what's predicting the future, is what's been reported before plus a prior. The linear method would say, well, x of t plus 1 is a prior blend plus a multiple of the previous development. So it's really a blending technique. So because I think the linear method is quite new, so I'm just going to work through a quick example. I think this is going to be interesting, hopefully. So I've taken the triangle, taken the first section, and then just converted it into sort of an Excel. So I apologize to people sitting on the right here, on my right, can't really see, but I've turned that into an incremental table, a cumulative table, and then I fit the three models. So your chain ladder would say your next development. So what I'm trying to predict is really that X, the red X at the bottom, for the next development period. And your chain ladder would say, well, X is 2.8, which is really the 67 total divided by 24. And so for X, it will be just that 1 times 2.8 or 2.8. The BF method, basically, because I was using a moving average, I'll take the average of the incremental, which is 2.3, and use that to set my next development period. So X in that case will be 1 plus 2.3 or 3.3. The linear is a blend. And for here, I just used a simple Excel linest function, but you can do this multiple ways. What's interesting, though, and is when I backtest it, right? Again, actually just moving back to the data, the average of the cumulative there is about 3.5 with a standard deviation of 1.9 at the bottom. You can see, I'm not sure if there's 0.8, but... What I've done in the blue boxes is effectively backtest based on these three different methods, what my cumulative would have been historically. So all the methods say they're good tests. They all show an average of 3.5. Great, tick, my A1E is 100%. But when I look at the standard deviation, my true standard deviation of my simulation is 1.9. But my chain ladder is telling me it's 2.9. My linear and BF is roughly similar at 0.91, right? So immediately, it should ring out to you that chain ladder is probably a bit volatile. And potentially linear and the BF, because there is a prior, is not quite capturing some elements of the development thing. And this theme would ring out once we see the result as well. Again, just a bit more background about... the two different actuaries. The first one I call the risk neutral actuary. Is there any trend? Something I noticed when we did the survey was, you know, there's a lot more people who put a upwards trend than a downwards trend. And so is there a bias there? And so for a risk neutral actuary, I would say they're as likely to draw an upwards trend as a downwards trend. There's also a risk averse actuary, which I think from the results, which probably is a proportion of us, where they would only put an up, they're more likely to incline to put an increasing trend than a decreasing trend. In this hypothetical scenario, I said, well, if there's greater than a 2% trend, I'll draw a straight line up. There's a few more thought process where if there's a step change, they'll pick the step change over the increasing trend. So just try to mimicking the thought process we had in the early on. So. And here to the results. So again, a lot of different combinations, but I think the ones of interest that we've particularly chosen out is, let's start off with, you know, something that we're reasonably comfortable with: stable incidence rates, stable reporting patterns, and then we'll step through, and a risk neutral actuary, and then we step through individually, one step at a time, to see how some of the misestimation comes in, or some of how potentially some methods increase volatility. So here are the six different scenarios. So we start off with stable exposure, stable incidence rates, deterministic claims. So at this point in time, I don't stochastically simulate my claims. I simply do incidence times exposure. I got a stable reporting pattern of about 2.5 years, which I still stochastically simulate. So that's, as always, would always be the case for the reporting patterns. And then I'll start off as the risk neutral actuary. Let's see my results. So the top three graphs show the chain ladder results, the linear method results, and the BF results. And I've just taken the mean and the standard deviation of 1,000 simulations. And here I'm measuring the predicted versus what I expect from the true underlying mean. So when everything's stable, great. The mean is actually quite close to 100% for all three different methods. What's interesting, though, is the standard deviation of the chain ladder is much higher than the linear and the BF method, which is going back to the point in the previous big table of numbers on what we saw before. And so for those, you're just trying to interpret what a high standard deviation means is for the chain ladder, there's actually about a 30 to 35% chance you'll get it wrong by 17.8%. Right. So not really focusing on the numbers here, but there's actually, you know, quite a bit of volatility just by defaulting to a certain methodology. Let's have a look at the risk averse actuary. So the mean's gone up. And risk averse here, again, just meaning is that out of 1,000 simulations, we go to now the other actuary goes, I only draw trends which I see go up or have a step change going up. And so you can see here, there's a bit more misestimation of the mean. More so on the chain ladder than the linear method. And that's predominantly because, or the BF method, and that's predominantly because there's a prior set in between that weights it back down. And the prior in this case would be a no trend, right? The standard deviation has actually dropped. And largely the reason behind that is in the previous risk neutral actuary, they'll be drawing lines going up and down. In this case, largely going up, right? And that's why it drops down some of the I can see a hand there, but could I?
Sorry.
So it's 1,000 simulations of 100 claims per annum for, I think, 20 years. So just to clarify the point, yeah. And then we run this. Yeah, but there's the reporting pattern that's still stochastic. Yeah. So 20 years of data, 100 claims per annum, and then... yeah, and then I'll simulate that, the reporting pattern, and see what an actuary will decide to do. So you can see some of the decision tree would give a bit more certainty on what the result is, less variation of the noise, but introduces a bit of bias. So now let's look at what happens when you add in stochastic claims. So instead of saying it's 100 claims per annum, it is... it follows a binomial distribution of incidence times exposure, and your stochastic and the noise is roughly, you know, square root of 100, which is 10 per year. The mean goes up slightly for all three. Again, you still see a bias, largely due to being risk averse in nature, and the standard deviation is thereabouts compared to the previous slide. So again, adding in noise just increases your misestimation bias and a slight increase in the standard deviation. Now let's look at increasing incidence rates. And here again, you're just using your standard set of methodology. You're not putting in any priors. You're saying, okay, my underlying simulation is increasing incidence rates, but I don't know that when I'm setting up my methodology or my decision-making tree process. All three undershoot. With the chain ladder being the closest to the true answer. And that's largely because, again, your prior goes, well, I don't think there's a trend. So then I'm not going to put in that trend when you're selecting those results. your standard deviation, again, even though it's the linear and the BF is telling you there's more certainty when you do it multiple times, but it's still biased and likely wrong. Step change. I'm really showing this slide here. It's just so when I did this, when I increased it by 30%, that pretty much all three methods do quite well because you would see it exactly in the data, a 30% increase. And then in your decision tree making processes, well, is there a trend or is there a step change? You would see it. And then so largely all three methods would say, well, a good estimators. But if that step change was not 30%, but only maybe 5%, I would think these answers be quite different. Lastly, and I think sometimes a bit of context is that we've seen, you know, a lot of our trustees emailing out to their members, you know, reminding them they've got insurance cover, you know, remember to contribute or else your insurance cover will turn off. And we think that it could lead to insurance members being more aware of that they actually have cover and hence faster reporting patterns. But again, if there was a faster reporting pattern, but without any prior, what would these models indicate? The chain ladder overshoots the most, with the linear and the BF method still overshooting, but bringing it back down again, more so during, because of the prior. And a common theme throughout all six results is that the linear and the BF method has a lower standard deviation compared to, the chain ladder method. So what's our conclusion? I've had the privilege of working with many smart men and women and, smart people. And I've learned some lessons throughout the life of my working career. The first one is it's better to be lucky than to be smart. And I woke up today thinking that's definitely the case. My Powerball ticket for $100 million didn't win, and this is why I'm here. So what is the smartest move? Unfortunately, I wasn't lucky. The second one, key lesson I learned in my working career is all models are wrong, some are useful. And this is clearly the case. So what have I learned from this? The first thing is I think the chain ladder is actually more sensitive to change than any of the other models. And that's largely because there's no prior. Having a prior means your result is less sensitive, but because you have a prior, that could lead to a biased estimator. And so depending on the underlying scenario, right, you might actually choose different methods, or is there a way to actually implement a prior in these methods? And that's probably the key takeaway from this. It's not defaulting to a certain methodology just because, you know, the actual profession has used this across centuries of time. It's actually forming a view about what you think is going on in the macroeconomics of a particular fund, the economy, seeing what's going on, you know, human behavior before we actually default to methodology. And we should not default to a particular methodology just because we've done that. Yeah. So I've enjoyed modeling these results, but there's always room for improvement. So if I was to, you know, do a bit more research, I'll probably design a more robust decision tree. Just drawing lines and negative lines probably wasn't what you had going through in mind. You were going through a survey. We are exploring the impact of GLMs. Maybe it was a cohort impact effect and whatnot. But otherwise, yeah, change some of the parameters, see what a shock does and whatnot. So hopefully this presentation has been insightful and ticked out of the 3 out of 3 stars. If you have any questions, feel free to ask.
So I'm reading some of the questions. The modeling misestimation appears to be a lot smaller than some of the price changes. How would you explain this?
Yeah, I think that comes back to the point I made at the start, which is the modeling is one aspect, but the reality of the deterioration in actual experience and also the commercial factors that play a role in the decisions that insurers make are bigger factors. But this is still, I think what we're illustrating is this is playing a role as well.
Another question is, would you consider significance testing to differentiate between forecast alternatives?
That's a 3-star question. Yeah, this is a 3-star question. I'm hoping the stars for the questions become 1-star over time, but As significance testing as, do you mind elaborating what significant testing, in terms of choosing the model or choosing a particular prior here?
Here I was referring to the classical modeling techniques of distinguishing between models, so under the general heading of model selection. And this was in relation to the three views of the data that were canvassed. Now, each of those views, for example, just pick the average, can be embedded in a fully written out model. So it might be a chain ladder model, for example. And similarly with the other two views. So a step change and a linear increase. So they can all be written as models and then calibrated. One would usually use a GLM to do this, but it's not the only way. Now, with that background, one usually selects between models or at least provides some information on how well they fit the data by using measures called information criteria. So the Akiaki information criteria, the Bayesian information criteria, and so on. And if you did that, you would rank the three views. You get first, second, third for those three views of the data. Now, whether you adopt the first, the one that is best fitted by the data, that's up to you, right? You can still inject your own judgment into the situation if you want to do that, but that would give you an objective measure of the degree to which those three models and indeed others that you might think of fit to the data.
I think it's a very valid point. I know, Greg, you and I worked together a long time ago in the general insurance area. One of the differences here is the volumes of data are much, much, much smaller, which doesn't mean you can't do other things, but it does make it harder to infer some of those things. So I know that companies are stretching the boundaries of, so what we've presented here is a very simplified version of what people do. I don't think it's that far off what people do, but, there's definitely additional, techniques that people could apply to sort of be more robust in their choices.
I'd just like to add to that. So obviously the chain out of the linear stuff is just very simple calculations that we've done here. But what we're actually researching in the background is when we implement GLMs, it comes with significant testings and information criteria. And something you mentioned, the Bayesian criteria, is actually, well, if we put the Bayesian in the GLM, right, and put some penalty factors, for example, if we do think the underlying reporting pattern follows an exponential, right, but we're just not sure whether, and we know, like, people who are 30 to 35 years old report a similar way, but what we're unsure of is some of the fund factors. We can say, well, we're more certain about age effects, but we're more uncertain about occupational or portfolio effects. So we would increase the penalty factor for those effects and see how those models would come out to be. But that is something is still under research and development at the moment. So maybe next year or the year after, we'll come up with a worked example.
Thank you all. We are at time, so please put your hands together and thank the speakers. Thank you for listening.